This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 31st of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, the Boulder Boulder Community Run made a comeback yesterday after a two-year pandemic hiatus. We'll hear from race participants. The ACLU of Colorado has filed a complaint with the city of Boulder, saying its camping ban violates civil rights. And how golfers can eat their greens. We'll have that story and more on This Week in Water. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then, this week on How on Earth, KGNU's award-winning science show, we have part two of the annual graduation special. Guests are four graduating PhD students from the different departments at the University of Colorado, Boulder. They talk about their thesis work and experience in grad school. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Memorial Day commemorations drew crowds to multiple Front Range events yesterday. The VFW Post 2601 and the American Legion Post 32 in Longmont led ceremonies Monday at Mountain View Cemetery, Stephen Day Park, and Foothills Garden of Memory to remember and honor those who died in military service. The Daily Camera reports a crowd of 100 people attended the event at Mountain View Cemetery. Hundreds also gathered at Fort Logan National Cemetery in Denver as the Department of Veterans Affairs hosted a wreath-laying ceremony. According to the Denver Gazette, the ceremony also included the playing of taps, a moment of silence, a rifle volley, an F-16 flyover, and speeches from notable figures in the military, including a keynote from Brigadier General Scott Sherman of Colorado's National Guard. The largest Memorial Day event in Boulder was the Boulder Boulder Citizens Race. While not necessarily an event to honor fallen soldiers, several veterans, including some who lost limbs during service, participated in the race. Governor Jared Polis signed a number of bills late last week as he toured the state touting the legislative significance of each measure signed into law. Polis started off Friday by signing a pollinator study bill at the Butterfly Pavilion in Westminster. As part of the study, the Department of Natural Resources will seek to gain a better understanding of the state's pollinators and their importance within the ecosystem and the state's food supply chain. Later on Friday, Polis signed two education bills at CSU Pueblo. One of the bills will allow veterans and National Guard members to audit college courses for a $10 fee, but for no credit. The other law creates the Southern Colorado Institute of Transportation Technology to advance sustainable transportation options. Later at the public county courthouse, Polis signed a bill granting collective bargaining rights to county public employees. The governor ended the day Friday by visiting the Smoky Jack Observatory in Westcliff to sign the bill designating and promoting so-called dark sky locations in the state. A new state law will help new teachers with stipends and student loan forgiveness. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Under the new law, Colorado student teachers will have access to up to $22,000 in stipends, and teachers who started and continued their careers during the pandemic can qualify for up to $5,000 in loan forgiveness. Chalkbeat, Colorado reports that the bill dedicates $52 million from federal relief money to get new teachers into the classroom and keeping them there during a time when schools across the state are dealing with shortages. Fewer teachers were entering the profession before the pandemic, and shortages have only worsened. One of the sponsors of the bill, State Representative Kathy Kipp, a Fort Collins Democrat, says that those who are in position to be student teachers are dropping out of educator prep programs because they can't afford to work for free and pay tuition. The new law will cover the cost of test fees for eligible educators and creates alternative ways of getting a license for teacher candidates who struggle to pass praxis exams. The new law also sets aside $10 million for loan forgiveness for an estimated 2,000 teachers who started in the 2019-2020 school year or more recently and are still in the classroom. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The Colorado Department of Transportation launched a new microbus service last week that will transport 11 passengers per hour from Denver's Union Station to various I-70 mountain locations. CDOT calls the new service Pegasus and has outfitted each van with power outlets, bike racks, and ski snowboard compartments. The service, ranging with a cost of $6 to $20 each way, will run Thursday through Sunday on an hourly basis and will stop in Idaho Springs, Frisco, Vail, and Avon, with each mountain stop having connections to local bus services. Governor Jared Polis and legislators joined CDOT leaders last Thursday at Denver's Union Station to unveil the shuttle service, which officials hope will ease congestion on Interstate 70. During Thursday's unveiling, Polis also signed a bill allowing free RTD rides this August and August 2023, along with funding for free rural transit services for this summer and next. The free rides in August aim to incentivize public transit during the month that historically has the worst air quality. The Lahontan Watershed Center is hosting a webinar Thursday at 5:30 p.m. to share information about the United States Forest Service National Environmental Policy Act process for forest management of the St. Vrain Watershed and its proposal with the St. Vrain Forest Health Partnership. The public can sign up for the webinar through the Lahontan Watershed Center website. The Forest Service's 30-day public comment period on the NEPA process begins June 8th. The public and stakeholders can view materials at the U.S. Forest Service website under the title of St. Vrain Forest Health Project. Boulder County moved up to high COVID-19 community levels last Friday based on metrics from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. According to the county's press release, COVID-19 cases are high in the community, and the strain on hospitals and other healthcare facilities within the county is rising. The case rate as of last Thursday is around 318 per 100,000 population. New COVID-19 hospital admissions are at around 10 per 100,000. Due to the higher levels, staff and visitors at jails, treatment centers, adult day centers, and day programs, and other similar facilities are required to wear facial coverings. City employees are also required to wear face coverings at public facilities. Today's weather includes rain and thunderstorms mainly in the late afternoon hours, with a 100% chance of precipitation during the evening hours. Today's highs will be in the 60s with lows in the 40s. The current temperature in Boulder is 45 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Boulder Community Run made a comeback yesterday after a two-year hiatus. KGNU sports reporter Jimmy Searfoss shares this sound collage from the race.
That is the sound of the ninth kilometer for runners as they make their way into Folsom Field to finish the famous Boulder. The annual 10K has been missing for the last 2 years due to COVID, but the race made its triumphant return to Boulder on Monday. Bagpipes and drumlines may be a little bit out of the ordinary for a 10K, and that's because the Boulder is no ordinary race. It has been named America's all-time best 10K by Runner's World and is the seventh largest running event in the world. Half of Boulder gets shut down so that over 50,000 participants can run through the streets. The running crowd is filled with a mix of all kinds of runners. Professionals lead the pack while those looking to just have a good time hang behind them. The bagpipes and drums are only a small part of the festivities that are alongside the runners on the course. To find out some of the other parts, I talked to a few participants.
What keeps y'all coming back?
The costumes. Absolutely the costumes.
And oh man, there were a lot of them.
I'm Captain Hook. Actually, we're going to meet up with the rest of our family. We're going to be the whole Peter Pan cast, basically. So we have Tinkerbell, Captain Hook, we have Wendy, the Crocodile, the Lost Boys.
We're Forrest Gump.
Oh, we are in the full wizard fits right now. We got the robes, the hats, a couple beards and whatnot. But
Some wands.
Well, I'm Hermes.
Yeah, I'm actually raising money for the Louisville Food Bank. So figured I'd make bacon at the Boulder.
We are dressed up as Grecians wearing togas.
I got it with a bunch of friends last year. There's like 15 of us that all have banana suits, and I'm the only one who like keeps the tradition going.
I'm invisible, but only in front of a green screen.
But as fun as it sounds, it was not always easy running in character.
Well, the morph suit got a little tight. It turns out it doesn't breathe very well.
I was a little hot.
I was a little too difficult, but we made it, right?
Itchy, hot.
I ran with the hook, and it is a sweaty hook.
There was another popular attraction that runners found on their run.
What makes y'all keep coming back?
The slip and slide?
Definitely the slip and slides.
Trampoline and two slip and slides.
Or slip and slides in the works.
Slip and slides.
Live music, fun costumes, and slip and slides are great. But I cannot talk about this race without talking about another part for our 21 and up runners.
What keeps y'all coming back?
The mimosas and Bloody Marys on the court.
I saw some cartwheel, do a cartwheel and we drink. That was kind of fun.
I love the shots, the seltzers.
Vodka?
Beer along the way.
Getting drunk on the course.
We're doing it for the drinks.
First time we've done it fun and drunk.
All jokes aside, the biggest reason I found people come run this race is because of a combination of all of these things. A runner is hard-pressed to find themselves running next to a pirate while listening to live music after watching someone run through a slip and slide, all while being surrounded by thousands of people cheering you on from the base of the Flatirons. You can't get that anywhere else. That kind of atmosphere and sense of community can only be found here in Boulder.
We just heard it was awesome and a whole lot of fun.
Just love it up here, man. It's a great time.
Everyone was super nice around. There was like lots of support.
It's a great race.
It's
really fun.
Support. The fans cheering.
The cheering.
Mostly the runners.
Yeah.
It's always a good event.
Yeah.
You know, the people and the motivation and stuff.
Well, coming off of COVID, this was an awesome time to reunite with all the people of Boulder.
While the Boulder Boulder is technically a race, for most, it's an experience. Until next year, for KGNU, I'm Jimmy Searfoss.
The American Civil Liberties Union filed a complaint to the city of Boulder last week over what is known as the city's camping ban. The camping ban is a combination of two different pieces of Boulder policy that give police the authority to ticket anyone living outside. The first ordinance the ACLU refers to as the blanket ban, created in the 1980s. It criminalizes sleeping with a blanket outside in Boulder. The second ban, Boulder amended last year to extend its scope, makes it illegal to use tents or any other enclosed structure on public property. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Annie Kurtz, an attorney and Equal Justice Works Fellow at the ACLU of Colorado, about the camping ban and why the ACLU is taking action now.
Annie, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for your interest in this lawsuit.
So to start, how is the camping ban, which includes the blanket ban and the tent ban, how are they violating people's civil rights?
Sure. So law is sometimes complicated. I think this one is nice and straightforward. The basic idea is just you can't punish someone for doing something based on the false premise that they had a choice in the matter. So the blanket ban, using a blanket while you're sleeping outside in Boulder, is a crime. Boulder is punishing unhoused people for sleeping outside, even though Boulder has no other option for them. The other law that we are challenging is the tent ban. If it's snowing outside, then you shouldn't be ticketing someone for sheltering themselves in a tent if they have nowhere indoors they can go, which, you know, it's really a fairly common sense thing. It violates the constitutional prohibition on cruel and unusual punishments. That's unconstitutional.
I mean, if it's that straightforward, how did the city justify the camping bans in the first place?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure what the origin of the first camping ban was, but I can tell you that the city was using the fact that there were empty shelter beds kind of on a nightly basis to justify all of this criminal enforcement. right? The idea was people are unhoused voluntarily. We have services available for them and they're just choosing not to use them. In fact, the main shelter in Boulder had at the time this very exclusionary policy on the books, a residency requirement that if you went to the shelter and you weren't already a Boulder resident for 6 months, you couldn't stay overnight there, essentially. And what the data now shows is that since that policy was lifted, the shelter has been turning people away because all of a sudden, a bunch more people are actually eligible to stay there. So I think at least 250 people have been turned away from the shelter.
Do you have any idea how much the city has spent enforcing this ban, from the actual policing to putting people in jail and ticketing and then taking them to court?
So there's plenty of data that shows that it is less expensive to house people than it is to criminalize their existence. What I can tell you is that from January of 2020 to January of 2022, there were close to 1,000 cases filed at the city court under one of these two ordinances. And around the same time that the city voted to expand this tent ban, they also allocated an additional almost $3 million to these anti-homeless enforcement practices.
I mean, it seems like what the city was trying to do with at least the expanding of the tent ban is make homelessness go away by criminalizing it. I mean, did it work? Is it working? Does that ever work?
No, definitely not. It's not working. Every expert will tell you it doesn't work. And I don't think that's the point of them either.
Well, what is the point? I mean, I know you're not the one who created the ban, but I mean, what do you think the idea is behind them? It seems like a really expensive way to not solve a problem and like in so doing harm a lot of people who are already super vulnerable.
Honestly, I think it is about trying to get people to leave. I think it's just, you know, a lot of the folks I know that have had these laws enforced against them in Boulder have had police say to them, get out of Boulder. And so I don't think that they were ever intended to be a solution to homelessness. I think they were intended to remove visible poverty from towns that were, you know, are uncomfortable seeing it. But I can tell you that criminalization just will never solve homelessness. You can't punish someone out of their poverty.
What happens if the city does respond to the complaint and stops ticketing people, other than not being ticketed? I mean, do you think this will make any difference for people who are unhoused in Boulder?
I hope so. I mean, I think that, first of all, getting tickets shapes people's lives, this kind of constant police interaction. And I think that even if that were all that changed, that would be a big deal. But I am hoping that the city will do, you know, the city has a lot of tools that it has rejected in the past or that it used to use and that it's gotten rid of that are options available. So the city has voted against safe parking. It's closed its day shelter. It has cut the number of shelter beds in half. These are all options that the city has kind of shunned in favor of putting all of its eggs in the basket of criminalization. So I am hoping that this lawsuit can shift us in a different direction.
Annie Kurtz is an attorney and Equal Justice Works Fellow at the ACLU of Colorado. Annie, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
There were no voicemails on this listener comment line this week, so we close out today's show with This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
How golfers can eat their greens. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Efforts to slow the climate crisis have focused on reducing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but a new study shows that won't be enough. We also need to cut methane and other overlooked pollutants.
If we do, Research from the Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development shows we can reduce the rate of global warming in half by 2050 and avoid the risk of irreversible impacts like increasing heat waves, droughts, superstorms, and wildfires.
In addition to methane, the other pollutants that must be cut are nitrous oxide that is emitted by burning fossil fuels, black carbon soot from burning coal, hydrofluorocarbons used for cooling, and low-level ozone.
Methane emissions have been soaring in recent years because of leaks from oil and gas operations and intensive livestock rearing. But cutting methane offers a fast way to reduce atmospheric heating while longer-term efforts on carbon are implemented.
Lead scientist Dr. Gabrielle Dreyfus said that their study is an optimistic message because we have low or no-cost strategies available that can slow global warming in the critical near term.
Recently, a library in a New Hampshire town was planning a fundraising plant sale but had to cancel because of an invasive species, the Asian jumping worm.
The worms, which are native to Japan and the Korean Peninsula, may have made their way to North America through landscape plants and were detected in Wisconsin in 2013.
They've spread fast across the East Coast and have now been spotted in California, where state officials say the worms pose a huge threat, not only to forests, but also to residential gardens.
The jumping worms can grow up to 8 inches long and can leap a foot in the air. They destroy forests because of the speed at which they devour fallen leaves, which creates soil and habitat for small animals and birds. When caught, they thrash around and behave like threatened snakes and can shed their tails.
To control the spread of the worms, the Cornell Cooperative Extension recommends, among other treatments, pouring a mixture of water and dry yellow mustard on the soil. That forces the worms to the surface, where they can be placed in a bag and thrown away.
Earlier this month, the UN held a summit on combating desertification, the process in which fertile land becomes desert because of drought, overgrazing, and climate change. The problem is severe in Africa, where up to 45% of the land is impacted, worse than any other continent.
Topping the summit's agenda was the Great Green Wall, an ambitious project that would plant billions of trees across the Sahel region from Senegal on the Atlantic coast to Ethiopia in the east to stop the Sahara Desert from spreading southward.
Started in 2005, the hope was that the program would create millions of green jobs and sequester vast amounts of carbon from the atmosphere.
But as the Associated Press reports, the Great Green Wall has hit a wall. Just under 10 million acres have been reforested, about 4% of the total goal, due to financial problems, the pandemic, and rising threats from terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State.
Also, climate change, which the program was meant to combat, is winning. Temperatures are rising 1.5 times faster in the Sahel than the global average, and declining rainfall makes restoring vegetation a challenge.
But while supporters are discouraged, the conference did result in new financial commitments and ideas. One initiative is to create markets for unique food and medicinal products grown in the region, not only to save its biodiversity and reinvigorate the project, but also to help local communities thrive. And finally, golf courses are criticized for being water hogs and using lots of chemicals to keep grass green. While they do offer open space, it's often used just by a few people at a time.
The industry is trying to make the sport more sustainable, with some clubs irrigating with recycled water or using electric mowers. But for owners of a club opening in the UK, a truly green course should be edible.
The Gilliflower Golf Club in southwest England will open on June 3rd, and the links will be surrounded by orchards with nut and fruit trees, as well as plots of vegetables.
The first hole in the course is a kitchen garden, growing rare varieties of bean, asparagus, shallot, and rhubarb. Apple trees along fairways will be used to make cider, and cherries for a liqueur. In the future, players will be able to tee off near an area growing tea leaves.
The owners say hedges and rough areas will be wildlife habitats, and pigs are being raised on site to keep the undergrowth in check.
The course director told The Guardian that golfers might be frustrated by losing a ball in the brush, but the owners hope players will like adding a dash of risk to their game.
And the course might start a trend that sees golf as a way to eat your greens.
That's it for This Week in Water. Support comes from GC Green, a veteran, woman, and Native American-owned clean energy and resiliency solutions company. Learn more at gcgreen.com.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Jimmy Searfoss, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message on our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.